I had the pleasure of taking a course with Rabbi Fried in the summer of 1996 at Azrieli on Jewish education. And I was actually in New York for the summer. I used to go back and forth for a couple of days. And I used to come home and tell Ilana what an amazing course it was. And when we invited Dr. Fried, she said to me, "Is that the one whose course you loved in Azrieli?" And I said, "Yes, that's the one." Just the insight that he has into issues of Jewish education and development of children and adolescents. So it's an honor to have him here, I guess, 11 years later since I first took his course. And actually, when he came, when we saw each other like last night, the person said, "Oh, I remember you now." So I guess with the red hair, it was more red back then. But it's so is yours. Yeah, okay. Okay. Yes, there's a... I'm not going to make any more comments. Okay, but Dr. Fried, he teaches at Stern College, a professor of psychology. He's taught education, as you heard earlier, the founder of Chush. He's now founding a place in Yerushalayim, Limudei Hashem, I believe, for special education. He's really one of the world's experts. My father has had a lot of dealings with Rabbi Hirsch and his work in special education. The two of them have worked with each other, so it's really an honor to have him here. And without further ado, he's going to talk. I think it's going to be, obviously, it's tied to his article that was published in Chakira Journal a couple years ago, "Are Our Children Too Worldly?" which, if I'm not mistaken, was based on an address you gave at an Aguda convention in the early 90s. And okay, Rabbi Fried.
Thank you. I guess just by opening, I want to say thank you for inviting me. It's been an inspiring and informative day listening to these speakers and feeling the vibes and the energy in the participants. So I think this is a movement that's very necessary, very beneficial to Klal Yisrael. And I'm glad to have the privilege to be part of it. The original title of this talk was "Are Our Children Too Worldly?" When I was invited to give it years ago at an Aguda convention, I told the person inviting me, I said, "You know what I'm going to do with that topic." And he said, "Do what you want." So I did, when they weren't very happy with that, actually. And I wrote it up and put it in a drawer, or almost wrote it up almost completely. And then a couple of years ago, I was invited to submit an article to Chakira Journal. I said, "I have something that probably only you would publish. It's almost finished. If you'd like, I'll write it up." And they said yes, and I didn't realize the distance between almost finished to finished, which took a lot of work. But I did finish it up. And it did get good reviews. But I think that there's better reasons for speaking about it than that it had good reviews. It's an important topic. And as Rabbi Angel said, we're living in an increasingly more narrowing world. And the question, are our children too worldly? The answer is, we need to redefine, first of all, what do we mean by too worldly? In the Yiddish Welt, it used to be called Er hat zu offene Augen. He's got eyes that are too wide, too open. The child, the kid, the boy, the girl, she knows too much about the world, and that was seen as being dangerous. We live in a world, as actually Rabbi Twersky mentioned, part of his address, it's a bit scary. A lot of addictions to internet, we have a new addiction. Although I have a problem with blaming all the ills of society on the internet, I think we have been a lot of problems before the internet. The question is, the real question that we're really addressing here is, how do we raise children in a Jewish world? How much do we expose them to the world at large? is that something we ought shelter them from? Is it something that we ought to introduce them just a little bit, as much as we have to? Or is it actually a positive need to introduce our children to the world at large and have them be aware and to grapple with it, to learn from it, to learn with it? What does Torah really want? And actually, what works? What pragmatically works? Many people blame many of our children on the fringe, and we spoke about this a little last night, on a too open world that we live in. I'm not going to address that issue. I'm not going to talk about children on the fringe now. I'm talking about all our children, actually. There is a campaign to increasingly isolate our youth from the world at large. Our children are presented in many of our schools as a picture of the world at large being dark, ominous, antagonistic to Torah values and ethics and morality, which often it is, but also generally void of values, which I don't believe it is. We teach our children, or some teach our children, that the world not directly attached to Torah has nothing of value to teach us and nothing from which we can benefit. Thus, there's nothing that one needs to know outside the daladamas of his or her yeshiva or seminary or community. Not language, not history, not science. Sometimes our youth are told everything out there is basically shtus. Nonsense. Irrelevant. I spoke to somebody just last week, a young woman, and somehow in conversation I mentioned, well, at least you're not putting up, but you know, you don't have the problems they're having in California. And she says, what's happening in California? I say, which planet are you on? You know, like what's happening in California? And somebody will tell me, and I'll tell you that I have these debates sometimes with my own students at Stern College. We're not talking about Williamsburg or Borough Park. Is it really important for me to know anything about the world out there? Now, there are going to be differences of opinion. If I could have the next slides. And Chazal tell us that we should have differences of opinion. Chazal tell us, Gemara in Chagiga, the Gemara speaks about Balei Asufot, those who gather. And who are they? The Gemara says, Eilu Talmidei Chachamim Shiyoshvim Asufot Asufot Voskim the Torah. These are Talmidei Chachamim who sit in groups and learn Torah together. Halalu Mutamin, Halalu Mutarin. These say something is Tameh, others say it's Tahor. These say it's impure, these say it's pure. Halalu Asrim, Halalu Mutarin. These say it's Asur, prohibited, others say it's Mutar. Halalu Paslim, Halalu Mafshirin. These say it's invalid, and others say, no, it's kosher. Shema yamar adam, perhaps a person might say, hey, chani lomed Torah me'ata, how can I learn Torah? I mean, these guys all disagree. They just don't seem to agree on anything. Talmud lomar, kulam nitnu meroi echad. They were all given, all the opinions were given from one shepherd, Moshe Rabbeinu, who brought us the Torah. El echad natnan, one God gave it. And Rashi comments, Ein lecha mibnei amachloket mevi raya mitorat Eloha ot acher ela mitorat Eloheinu. So long as none of the disputants are bringing proof from some other God, but they're bringing their proofs from Torah. Parnes echad amran, Ein lecha mevi raya midivrei navi abalach loka Moshe Rabbeinu. We're not bringing proofs from a Navi who's different than Moshe, who argues with Moshe. Mipi Adon Kol HaMaasim Baruch Hu, it's all given. All of these opinions were given from the Adon Kol HaMaasim, the Ribono Shel Olam, the Creator Himself. Tachsiv, as it says, Vayedaber Elohim et Kol HaDvarim Ha'elo. God said all of these words, the words of the Matirin, the Masrin, those who declare pure and impure, all the disputants.
Af ata asei oznechaka farcheset.
You make your ears like a sieve.
To take in. Me'achar shekulan libon l'shemayim, Rashi says.
Because since all of the disputants have shem shemayim, pure intentions,
asei oznechaka shemat v'lemod,
listen to all the opinions and learn. And know everybody's words. And when you make up an opinion, when you understand how to make, to come to a conclusion,
decide who you feel like.
Get yourself a heart that can listen to the words of those who declare something pure, and as well as to the words of those who declare it impure. To the words of those who declare something prohibited, as well as to those the words of those who declare it permitted. As the words of those who say it's invalid, or teref, and those who say it's kasher. There are going to be different opinions, and on the topic that I'm speaking about, I'm going to offer you my opinion. My opinion, my bias, is the only bias I have, is the only bias I can share with you. And I do recognize there are others who feel differently, but I can just say from what my mind tells me, what my experience tells me, what I believe is right. Is it better, does it work, to shelter our children? To shelter, when we talk about sheltering, we shelter children from disease in the physical world. We shelter them sometimes from information that they're not ready yet to process. They're too young to process it. They can't really fully understand it. Sometimes we can shelter them from certain diseases. We can shelter them. Certain diseases, bacteria, we cannot shelter them. Instead, we immunize them. It's not always possible to shelter. In the world of ethics, morality, values, this bird of the spirit, we also need to ask ourselves, when you want to shelter your child from something, what are you sheltering him from? Are you protecting him? Can you really shelter the child? Is it possible to create walls that are impermeable? Can we really do that? Years ago, I was privy to have a conversation with the great Gaon, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal. I was there with a group of educators, and a number of questions were placed to Rabbi Yaakov. Questions about teaching. Should we teach children about evolution? Should we teach children about the Roman Catholic, history of the Roman Catholic Church? How about Greek mythology? And various other aspects. Would be too long to go through his answers, but his answers were basically yes, 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 yes. He said, you know, if you skip some pages, those are the pages the kids are going to run back to read, especially well. You should teach about Greek mythology. Actually, it's a mitzvah to teach about it because of Avodah Zarah. That is so ridiculous. We can see what people were able at one time to believe and to see how out of touch it was with anything. In fact, it's a positive thing to teach about it. Evolution, you've got to have an informed mind. Teach it to know how to accept it, how not to accept it, but you should teach it. You can. And then he said to us, you know, there's a square town not far. He was living in Muncie. He says, it's not far from here, the square town. In square town, they have, I understand, he said, now they have their little hospital where you can give birth to a child. You can live in square town all your life, and you can die and be buried in square town. And if somebody can do that, tabo aleihem bracha, perhaps they should be blessed if they can do that. But most of us cannot and do not live in square town. And what are you going to do? You're not going to teach a child about evolution? You're going to wait till the boy or girl is 17, 18 years old? They're going to pick up a New York Times, which is going to report without any comment, without editorial, without anything, and the New York Times prints only the news that's fit, all the news that's fit to print, only the truth, that they found bones of such and such years, 5 million years, and the child's not ready, and he's going to read this, and you haven't prepared them for life. So you must teach it. Then he said, you know,
I'm asked a lot of questions about sheltering children, especially about girls here in Muncie. And I tell them, you really can't. It doesn't work. And he said there are cities, there are towns in which people have created special exclusive schools for the frumer population. If they would ask me about my own grandchildren, he says they don't ask me. But if they would ask me whether to send my children to the local day school or the cheder, I would say the day school. It's a more inclusive society. It's just more normal. And then he said, in summing up, he said, let me tell you a story. He said, when I was a boy, I had a chaver, a friend. He was a year older than me. He always did things a little more than me. He had longer payas, I had shorter payas. He wore a gartel. He davened in a gartel. I didn't. Well, you know, things went on and we parted. I was in Israel last year. He had gone to the Knesset Gedola in 75. And I heard that he lives in Kfar Saba, this friend of mine. I went to visit him. And what should I tell you? Nebuch, he says, he puts on the lights on Shabbos today. That was the way he expressed it. He says, no, I visited him when I left to leave. I got up to leave. My friend said to me, Yankel, what's happened to us? Ich bin doch als gewend frumer von dir. I was always frumer than you were. And Rabbi Yankel smiled at this point. He had a twinkle in his eye. And he says, Ob ich ihm geämpft, yeah, yeah. Du bist doch als gewend frumer. Ich bin aber als gewend kluger. Yes, it's true. Can I have the next slide? You were always frumer, but I was always wiser. And there was a lesson to learn. He learned from this. I learned, you know, to me this has become a lesson for life. We think, and there is we believe, unfortunately, and we allow our children to grow up thinking that frumkeit is somehow can't afford wisdom. Rabbi Yankel's position was, and this was his position throughout his life, that frumkeit is the intelligent choice. Of course, you need to work your way to that. But that it's not, the frumkeit is not something that asks you to close your mind, to put blinders on, because it can't stand the light of knowledge, but just the opposite. If you're really wise, you will find that that's the way you were going to go. Now, what was he talking about? I think it's important to say, Rabbi Yankel was talking about exposing children to the world. He was not talking about those aspects of the world, of the general culture, which are clearly prohibited by Shulchan Aruch. And there are things which are prohibited, and I think people need to know the line. We do need to understand the line. It's not blanket. We don't have general prohibition. But we're talking about Chukateim lo teleichu. In Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef Tzvi says, Pirish lanu asmag. The smag has already explained for us. Sheshnei darkei ha'emori yesh. There are two ways of the pagan ways, two ways which are called the ways of the pagan. Echad mishum nichush. One is which is called sorcery, belief in, I guess, in the occult. There are some things which are prohibited to us as idolatry. Yosef writes, that which is asur, that which is prohibited to us as the ways of the Gentiles,
that's only davar asher shayach bo pritzut derech hatznius va'anava.
Anything which violates modesty and humility.
And those
customs of idol worshippers, these things are prohibited. Anything else is certainly not prohibited. And Rabbi Yankel was not talking about exposing children to pritzus, exposing children to immodesty, exposing children to values and to a culture, those aspects of the culture that are anathema to Torah values, of specifically tznius and humility. It could continue. This, I don't want to go through this completely, but in Shulchan Aruch we do have a concept of En Holchim B'chukat Avdei Chachamim. We do not follow the ways of the idolaters. It lists a number of things we don't do. If we could continue, please. But again, the Ramon Shulchan Aruch says that this is only refers to things which are either idolatry or which are referred to things which are priests. We could hear the next one. Aval davar shen ha'agula to'elus, anything which non-Jews do, and it has a positive purpose. Kegon, he says, shedarkon shel mishu rofe mumche, if somebody, if the custom among the Gentiles is that a master physician wears certain clothing to identify him, you can't say that's the ways of the Gentiles. That has a positive aspect, and he says that absolutely should be done. And things which are done for respect, and various other things. So just, if we could continue. Rabbi Yaakov was not talking about that. What was he talking about? There's a story, to my understanding, and in the context of our discussion, it was clear. Rabbi Yaakov was talking about two kinds of knowledge, which he felt that all our children should be exposed. First of all, he felt that all our children should be exposed. Just stay there. I'll come to this. Rabbi Yaakov felt that our children should be exposed to those ideas that are widely spread in the general culture, where a lack of understanding of them, such as, for example, evolution, such as the age of the world, various ideas that are out there, where a lack of understanding of which can potentially harm our children, and of which our children will perforce become aware. It's in the air. There are many, many ideas in the culture that are in the air. And I could, you know, sit and list them in many, many ideas in pop psychology, which are in the air. Many ideas. There's a story told about, I heard it from Matzvi Gifter Zatzal, who told it about the two his uncles, the two Rosh Yeshivas of Telz, who came to America and set up the Telz Yeshiva, Ramatul Katz, and Rebellion Mayor Bloch, and they were sitting in conversation one day, and one of them said, Baruch Hashem, they'd been in America for 3 or 4 years, one of them said, Baruch Hashem, America has not influenced me in any way. And the other one jumped up and said, wow, look to what extent it's influenced him, he doesn't feel it anymore. Culture is pervasive. We seep it in, we drink it in, we breathe it in the air. And to say that we're going to protect children from breathing the air is ludicrous. And he was talking, Rianke felt that those ideas which are part of society, which are the basic culture, the values of society, the values of democracy, the values that children need to know, the values of how our system functions, how the world we live in functions, are important. Children must know them. He also felt there are aspects of the general culture which are not only benign, but actually important for our growth. Knowing the language, the history, the science, the social mores. You know, I ask kids sometimes in New York, please name the 5 boroughs of the city of New York, and they'll tell me Borough Park, Williamsburg, Flatbush, Monroe, and Squaretown. You know? You know, you can't. There are svarim that say that a Talmud Chacham, we know that a blemish on the coat of a Talmud Chacham is considered the desecration of God's name because he's not clean. And one of the svarim, I forget now who the author is, he writes that a blemish on the coat of a Talmud Chacham who's not aware of the basic knowledge that a person is in society should know, basic mathematics, basic history, basic science, that is a big blemish on him and is a tremendous desecration of God's name when it turns out that the Talmud Chacham is ignorant. Rabbi Yaakov also felt that there is some knowledge that we need to know which is contradictory to our values. There is knowledge which is in the air which contradicts our values and our belief system, at least taken at face value, which children need to be exposed to. They need to know it. Because if they don't know it, they're going to be unprotected against it. They will not know how to deal with it. And this is a very basic idea. There's a story told about Rabbi Yaakov. You can read it up there or you can listen to me tell it. Rabbi Yaakov was sitting in yeshiva in Slobodka. There was a gentleman in the yeshiva, a doctor, who was a Baal Tshuva. And he was learning in the yeshiva with a chavruta. And they were learning Masechtas Gittin. Masechtas Gittin, Dav Zayin, the Gemara, speaks about the borders of Eretz Yisrael, drawing a line from Akko to Turei Amnon. And this doctor said the Gemara and the map don't match. Somehow the Gemara's description of the borders and the maps just don't match. And his chavrusa got all upset, refused to learn with him. He says, how can I learn somebody who asks questions on the questions, the integrity of the Gemara based on a map? Rabbi Yaakov took a different position. Rabbi Yaakov said the Gemara cannot contradict the map. The map was drawn by people, cartographers. They saw the outline. You're either not understanding the map or you're not understanding the Gemara, but they have to connect. They have to be consonant. The word Torah cannot contradict reality. Speak about why that is. And Rabbi Yaakov took it on himself to attack the problem, which he did. And he showed this person that there really was no contradiction between Torah and the map. He resolved the problem. We're not told how he resolved it, but we're told that he sat and resolved the problem. The important thing is not how he resolved the problem, but he felt that the problem had to be resolved. You couldn't just wave off reality. We could continue. My students often ask me, actually, and these are my college-educated students, why is it important for us to know about the world out there? Isn't it enough to know just about Torah? Isn't it enough just to know about the Dalai Lama Shel Halacha? Is it not enough to know about our Jewish world? Why do we need to know about the world out there, actually with all its blemishes and some things which we consider vulgar to know about, etc.? And I tell them, and later found it in Rishonim, the Mishnah tells us, Da mashe tashiv l'apikoros. You need to know what to answer an apikoros. What do you answer a heretic? And their answer, their comeback to me is, well, it's not my job to answer heretics. I'm not a rabbi. I don't have to fight for myself. I'm a private individual. Why do I need to answer a heretic? The Maral says, and others, as Rambit will say, that the Dama Shetoshev Apikoros does not mean the heretic out there. It refers to the heretic in you. Every one of us has a little heretic in our hearts that we carry around, a little Apikoros who asks questions. It's the natural state of humankind. If our brains are working, we're asking questions. If we're asking questions, we can do one or two things. We can do as it used to be, the Nusach used to be, Matun Shpregen. Don't ask. I can't think of a greater heresy than don't ask. Because don't ask means, come on, let's wink. You know, we all know the questions and there are no answers. It doesn't really make sense, but it's a good lifestyle, so let's continue with it. Let's keep walking the walk, talking the talk, and let's just avoid the questions. That's heresy. There are answers. If we believe Torah to be truth, if we believe that Torah values and Torah beliefs can stand the test of time, the test of science, then our job is to expose our children to it and teach them how to think. The Maral says that it's important, even though it says, Lo Sosurach Elabachem, etc., because he's speaking, the Maral speaks about the importance of knowing science. The importance of knowing about God's world. After all, it was God who created the world, and science is the study of that world that he created. Well, if we want to study, then he says, but who are you going to study from? And he goes through, you know, people are going to give you heretical ideas. You're going to read books, their books. Well, there are going to be heretical ideas in there, and how can you do that? And then he says,
But if you're going to learn it, it says, "Vedam ashutashiv la'apikores," know what to answer in heretic. And if you learn it with this, in the spirit of, I want to know the answer to the questions, I want to know what to answer a heretic, meaning the heretic in me, you're certainly not going to be negatively influenced by those ideas. The Mabit, rather the Ivitz, Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, says, it does not say da la hashiv la apikoros. It doesn't say no to answer an apikoros, because it's not your job to answer him. It's not, unless you're a community leader, unless it's your job to debate heretics, perhaps. But he says that's not what he means. It says da ma la hashiv, know what to answer. Why? And he says da ma shetoshis apikoros lo shetashiv, not that you should answer, el sheteida atala atzmecha. You should know for yourself yom. You need to learn, you need to understand the thinking of those who are the thinking of those who are the thoughts and the philosophies that are in opposition to Torah. You need to reconcile them. You need to think about them. You need to be able to address those for yourself. Baal Shem Tov, it says, the Baal Shem Tov says that when Kal Yisrael went to just before Kriyat Yamsuf, God says to Moshe, I'm going to split the sea. Laman Yedu Mitzrayim Ki Ani Hashem. Mitzrayim will know. And the Baal Shem Tov asks, the Mitzrayim will know. Why was that so important? The whole Kriyas Yamsuf worship, the Mitzrayim should know. And which Mitzrayim are we talking about? The one who are going to be dead in a few hours. Why does it matter that they should know? And the Baal Shem Tov says, no, it means the Mitzri that's in every Jew's heart. The little Mitzri they brought out of Mitzrayim. When they left out of Mitzrayim, they didn't leave the whole culture behind. They brought a little Mitzri along with them. And that little Mitzri in you should know, what did that Ki Ani Hashem? The Mabit says that every person has a responsibility. Every person has a responsibility to his capabilities to know what, to have knowledge of God and His belief. And God will elevate him by knowledge. And he continues. No, the other way. How'd you get there? Really? Something got mixed up. Okay. Stay there. He continues to say that every person has a responsibility, that this is what Chazal mean when they say da mashitashiv lapikoros, that you need to study what's out there, all of the ideas that are out there, so that you can reconcile them with Torah. Now, there are communities that certainly believe that we should shelter our children, believe differently than this position. Our children are too weak to be exposed to ideas that are out there. Our children aren't ready. They won't know what to do with it. We're going to lose them. We're going to build walls, and we're going to keep those out, keep the ideas out. It was a fairly Gary Albarelli, an Italian writer who now actually teaches at Stern College in the English department. At that time, he had for 5 years was an English teacher in the Satmar Cheder in Williamsburg. And he wrote a little book about his experiences there. And one of the vignettes that he brings is a story of a 14-year-old boy. He was tutoring a boy, one of his classes, elementary school children at his home. And the other children of the family would gravitate to the table and would also want to learn. And there was this 14-year-old bacher who would come back every day from his yeshiva when the tutor would be there for his younger brother and also join the lesson. And this 14-year-old insisted on walking the teacher to the subway every time after the lessons. And on the way to the subway, he would pepper him with questions. He brings here some examples. How they know the weather, what means geology, who is Con Edison, and he says, Thomas, I say, Thomas Edison, no, he says,
politely embarrassed by my ignorance, Con Edison. Con Edison is the electric company in New York. Then he tells us one question. We're standing across from the elevated train. Teacher, he says one day, why is it we know from the Torah that the earth is 5,000 years old, but the museum have bones that are a million years? And he said, oh, that's a good question. You should think about the question for a long time. He wasn't going to grapple with that. But this is a kid in Williamsburg, in Satmar. This is a kid in a hermit, in a sealed society. And I'll tell you, and I've visited and been and spoken to parents and children from various sealed and closed societies. They all ask this question. I once met a young girl from the first time, actually, I heard the name. I didn't know this. A young girl, 15-year-old girl from a community, city community in Brooklyn. She was into Britney Spears. That's when I first heard the name. She knew more than I did. In this sealed society, it's pretense. It's folly to believe that we can keep the world out, that we can keep the world at bay. It is not just, it's foolish, it's dangerous. Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, you know, we look back to Gdolei Yisrael, and we want to learn from Gdolei Yisrael. We want to learn what the greats of previous generation had to say to us, and we should. But I think that we should also look at where those people lived and what kind of societies they dealt with. The Gadol b'Yisrael, the leader of Klal Yisrael, of 100, 150 years ago, who lived in a society that was closest to ours, not the shtetl, was Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, who lived in Hamburg in Germany. And Hirsch dealt with the interface of a Torah life with secularism, the interface of Torah knowledge and science, the fact of Jews living in an open society and being open and in contact with their Gentile neighbors. And we ignore what he has to say. He said anything I have to say, he said many, many years ago. Let's read from him. He says, it would be most perverse and criminal of us to seek to instill into our children a contempt based on ignorance and untruth for everything that is not specifically Jewish, for all other human arts and sciences, in the belief that by inculcating our children with such a negative attitude, we could safeguard them from contacts with the scholarly and scientific endeavors of the rest of mankind. It is true, of course, that the results of secular research and study will not always coincide with the truth of Judaism, for the simple reason that they do not proceed from the axiomatic premises of Jewish truth. But the reality is that our children move in circles influenced and shaped by these results. Your children will come within the radius of the secular human wisdom, whether it be in the lecture halls of academia or in the pages of literature, I would add, or in the workplace. And that they discovered that our sages whose teachings embody the truth have taught us, Shenatan Mechmatol Basar Vadam, Chazal, teach us there's a bracha, a blessing to make when you see a secular wise person, a scientist, there's a bracha to make that it is God who has given of his own wisdom to mortals. They will come to overrate secular studies in the same measure in which they have been taught to despise them. Because they're going to look at the world out there. You told them it's all lies, and they're meeting it. You will see then that your simple-minded calculations were just as criminal as they were perverse. Criminal because they enlisted the help of untruth, supposedly in order to protect the truth. And because you have thus departed from the path upon which your own sages have proceeded, you have beckoned you to follow them. Perverse, because by doing so you have achieved precisely the opposite of what you wanted to accomplish. For now your child, suspecting you of either deceit or lamentable ignorance, will transfer the blame and the disgrace that should rightly be placed only upon you and your conduct to all Jewish wisdom and knowledge, all the Jewish education and training which he received under your guidance. Your child will consequently begin to doubt all of Judaism, which, so at least it must seem to him from your behavior,
can exist only in the night and darkness of ignorance, and which must close its eyes and the minds of its adherents to the light of all knowledge if it is not to perish.
When we teach our children that you can't know, there's a terrible dark world out there. It's dangerous. What are we teaching them? First of all, we're teaching them a lie. It's not all shtus. You know, they use air conditioners every day. They use their, you know, Blackberries and laptops, and who made them? Those goyims who only know shtus. Come on, it's not shtus. If there's stuff out there that's usable, then you can't tell kids that it's not. Sometimes we try to say, well, you know, if it works for Bnei Brak, it might work for Cleveland, or it might work for New York. A friend of mine went to ask the Restipler the question about when, there was a question about education, when to start Gemara, at what age to start Gemara in Cleveland. But the Restipler gave him a 3-point answer, the third one of which is important to us. He said, keep in mind that not everything that's right for Bnei Brak is necessarily right for Cleveland, or for Toronto, or for New York, or for Bnei Brak. We can't transfer, you know, every society has to deal with its realities. We are told by Chazal, Im yor malocha odom yesh chochma bagoyim tamin, Torah bagoyim al tamin. If a person tells you there is wisdom among the nations, believe them. Torah bagoyim, if he tells you there's Torah amongst the goyim, no, don't believe that. What does that mean? We know there's no Torah amongst the goyim. What does it mean? What are Chazal telling us? I have my view of this, my interpretation of this, and I'll share it with you, and you can accept it or reject it. In science, as in every endeavor, there is data. Every intellectual endeavor has data. Every field has its data. And then it has its interpretation. So geologists will look at layers of sediment in the earth and find X number of layers of sediment. And that is the data. In every field, in every scientific field, people gather data. Then people build theories and interpret that data. Data, it sometimes happens that people lie about it, but it's very rare. It's very rare in science that the data that's reported is untrue. It's foolish not to accept data. Yeah, you want to be blind, you know. There are no dinosaur bones in a museum. It's dog bones that get popular. I mean, that's silly. It's stupid. It makes us look stupid. In Gomer Lachaotam, Yesh Chochma Bagoyim refers to data. When the scientists find something, when they discover something, tamin, believe it. There's no way to argue with reality. Now comes interpretation, theories. Data needs to be interpreted. Every interpretation, every theory comes from a certain Weltanschauung. Every theory comes from a certain perspective. We interpret data in view of our interpretation, our basic beliefs and premises about life in general. That's Torah. Torah is Malashon Hora'ah. It means to teach. What does the data teach us? That Torah Bagoyim Al Tamin. If they tell you, no, the theory, he's telling you this is what this data means, maybe, but not necessarily. You can't accept that on faith. That data, the theory that the world uses to explain certain data, must be put up to the light of Torah. Does it fit or doesn't it fit? If it fits, fine, it's a theory. If it doesn't fit, you have a problem. The problem is not, this doesn't necessarily mean the theory is wrong. Maybe your understanding of Torah is wrong. Maybe your understanding of the theory is wrong. And if your understanding of the theory is right, understanding of Torah is right, you can't just reject it. You have the data to deal with. You have to find another way to explain the data. Then you have to find a way to explain that data which fits with the Torah perspective. So, Chochma Bagoyim, data, Tamin, you can accept it and accept it at face value. Theory, I did some work and tried to prove that the word Torah, the word theory derives from the word Torah. It has the same root, but it doesn't. I couldn't. It sounded good anyways. It's not. Theory is a Greek word. It comes from has a Greek base. But the meaning is the same. The theory is, what does the facts teach us? How do we put it together? Torah is, what does this teach us? What is, most importantly, what does it teach me about life? And there we need to look at what the Torah is teaching us, or what the data is teaching us. But we can't reject the data. We have to grapple with it. Sometimes we have to grapple with it and re-explain it. But a battle it is. We cannot ignore the wisdom that's out there. The Chassam Sofer, not a man known for liberal positions. The Chassam Sofer led the fight against reform. The Chassam Sofer is the one who his children made the split in the split up the Orthodox and Reform communities. So we're not talking about, you know, some liberal positions here. The Chassam Sofer writes, he brings a chazal, Kol Ha'omer, Davar Chochma, Afilo B'umot Ha'olam, Nikra Chacham. He brings a chazal, and he questions, the chazal say that anybody who says something wise, even from amongst the Gentiles, is considered a Chacham. And he asks, actually, why does the Gemara have to tell us that? Who would think differently? Of course he's a Chacham. The Chassam Sofer, in a different place, in trying to explain, there's a Mishnah Masechtas Nida that talks about the anatomy of a woman. It's regarding Hilchos Nida. And the Mishnah uses a schema of a house with the floor, with the second floor, a third floor. It uses a certain schematic description. And let's read what the Chassam Sofer writes about the Mishnah. Achrei hachakira mipisfarim v'sofrim. After research from books and writers, chachmei v'safrei hanituach, those who work in surgery, in anatomy, i'efshar lanu lakhisham tziyut, we cannot deny reality. She'eino keperush rashi v'tosvos, v'tziur maram lublin. That the Mishnah does not make sense according neither Rashi or Tosvos or the Maram Lublin. Reality says that cannot be pshat. Ve'ein lanu ela mashekatav Rambam. So he goes according to the Rambam, and he goes, but he says you can't. Ulken, he says, lo itrachti klal bibiur Rashi v'Tosvos v'shmatin. I didn't even try to explain Rashi and Tosvos. Ki efshar leholman lefiyam tziut hamiti. It's not possible for Rashi and Tosfos here to correspond with reality. The reality in anatomy tells us different. There's a Gemara. The Gemara discusses whether various kinds of feet, again in Nida, various fetuses that are lost, if an aborted pregnancy, various kinds of aborted fetuses. The Gemara asks a question, it has relevance to the ritualistic purity or impurity of the woman. Does she have to go to a mikveh? Does she not? And so on. The Gemara asks a question about a fetus of a certain shape, a fetus that comes out in the shape of a bird. The Gemara says, Rebbe is the ultimate authority in Shas. Rebbe says, Davar she'eino sha'alta. You asked something that doesn't exist. There ain't no such thing. The Gemara asks a question. We have a braita that says there is such a thing. Generally, we have a rule that nobody can argue with Rebbe. You can't, especially in Amora. And the Beit Yosef, who writes the Sefer Kalei HaGemara, writes Venira, and he asks, how do we reconcile this? How do they ask a question on Rebbe? How do they challenge Rebbe? Rebbe is the ultimate authority. And he says, she'ilu haya davar talui bedin. Had the argument been about something which is a halacha, Rebbe says the halacha is this way, the other one says the halacha is the other way, no, you can't challenge Rebbe. Hayinu amrimim, Rebbe lo shana Reb Chiya min olei. We would say, if Rebbe didn't teach this halacha, where would Reb Chiya come from to argue with it? Aval davar hatalui b'mtziyut. Something which depends not on halacha, but Does it or does it not exist? On Metziut, im yeshno o eino, ein lerebi yitron al shar bnei adam. Rebbe has no more authority than anybody else. And again, here we find the Beis Yosef, we find the Chasam Sofer, taking into account scientific knowledge, secular knowledge, and applying it in how they will understand the halacha, how they will understand the Gemara, how they will understand a Mishnah. Reb Sadia Gaon says that we generally explain psukim according to the simple pshat of the pasuk, except either we change the pshat in the pasuk. If our senses tell us it can't be, that can't be pshat. If we read a pasuk which says, and our senses, he brings examples where it says that the senses say that it can't be the simple literal meaning because it goes against our senses. Or it goes against logic. We don't learn pshat in the pasuk that way, Besadi Gaon says. He gives other examples. These are the ones I wanted to bring. What is the basis of the position? Now, we believe something, and here we have to reconcile our beliefs. We believe, we are taught, as the Medrash says, that God created the world using the Torah as a blueprint for that world. The Medrash says, HaTorah omeret ani hayiti kli umnato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I was the tool with which He created the world. Whatever that means, in some form it means that he looked into the Torah and using it as a blueprint created the world. The Zohar says, he looked into the Oraita, into the Torah, and created the world. Well, if somebody's created a building, an architect created a building using a blueprint, if I looked at the blueprint, and the blueprint said that the building has two windows here, and I look at the room in the building, and it's got only one window there, I got a problem. The blueprint and the building have to match. Unless I find that the architect or the builders did not follow the blueprint. But God followed the blueprint. Therefore, by definition, from a believer's perspective, there cannot be scientific data, they cannot be reality that contradicts Torah. This was the position of Rabbi Yaakov. This was the what you believe. If you really believe, then you believe that, well, hey, this was the blueprint, it's got a match. And when Rabbi Yaakov saw a discrepancy between the map and the Gemara, it's a seeming discrepancy. The blueprint cannot contradict the reality. The Ramban says that everything, he also says, and this is quoted by the Rabbi Yeshiva very often, that everything, all wisdom in the world is in Torah. But we don't know, it may be true. We're told about the Gra learning all of medicine from certain Prokim and Bereshit. Actually, I've looked for a source for that, I haven't found it anywhere. But that is the general popular notion. And I asked Talmidei Chachamim, and they say, yeah, if it's there, Ramban says it's there. But do we know how to get at it? And if we don't know how to get at it from Torah, we have to get at it from a different place. We can't. I asked the Rosh Yeshiva, Ramot Chayafen, of the Navardika Yeshiva. I told him, Moti, he's a friend of mine. I said, you know, do you ever hear about this Gra? He says, let me tell you what my father says, Rav Avrom Yaffen. My father says that up till 1957, nobody was able to send a Sputnik up. Not Rashi, not Chazal, not Rashi, not the Rambam, not the Vilna Gaon or the Baal Shem Tov, and it's not apikorsus to believe that. We don't need to tie ourselves in a conundrum which we can't escape from and which our children can't escape from. So though the Ramban says it, yes, it's there. The Rambam, the Maral says, "Ki kol davar shulamod al mahut haolam yesh la adam lilmod umuchuyav hu b'zeh." everything which comes to teach us about the world, a person should read, should learn, and he's obligated to do so. Ki hakol ma'asa Hashem hu v'yesh lamod aleihem malkir al yedei zeh baro, because all of it is the work of God, and by learning about the creation, you learn about the greatness, and you have awe for the Bria, for the Rabbeinu Shalom. We need to show our children this sign. You know, just this little apropos, a number of years ago, I was in New Hampshire, northern New Hampshire, with my family. Children, grandchildren. We climbed a mountain called Bald Mountain. It's a beautiful mountain. It's bald on top, it has no trees. And you have a 360-degree panoramic view of beauty, of nature, of mountains, of lakes. And we're up there, and my son-in-law bends down to his six-and-a-half-year-old son, and he says, Kalman, you see, all that's Neflo Tabore. Kid didn't know the term. He says, what's that? He says, oh, well, you know, the mountains, the trees, the lake, everything you see out there, Hashem created it. And I was standing on the side, and I was watching this, and the child's jaw dropped open. And it only took 6 days? And it hit me. This kid had heard when he was 3, 4, 5, 6, Bereshit Bara Elokim. He was never awed by it. It never moved him. Because it was dry, because he wasn't exposed to the world. If you want our children to connect to Torah, we have to make Torah relevant to the world. When we tell children, somehow the world out there, God created, but it has nothing to do with us. So the world has nothing to do with us, and Torah has nothing to do with the world. That's a very dangerous flip side of that coin. When we tell our children, if we could just move, when we tell our children that the world has nothing to do with Torah, has nothing to do with the world, has nothing to do with Torah. The flip side is Torah has nothing to do with the world. Peter Berger, a sociologist, writes how people separate real life from their church life, if you will, religious life. He says, as a person, this is a business, and I know that it pays to be inconsiderate of others. I may laugh at a joke in which this maxim leads to failure. I may be moved by an actor or preacher extolling the virtues of consideration. And I may concede in a philosophical mood that all social relations should be governed by the golden rule. Having laughed, having been moved, and having philosophized, I return to the serious world of business. Once more, recognize the logic of my maxims and act accordingly. Is this what we want for our children? Do we want them to know Torah is something you do on Shabbos? But in real life, hey, come on, you know, cut it out. People are doing that today. Somebody mentioned yesterday going to non-Jewish courts. You know, ask some people, I've asked some people, how could you go to a non-Jewish court? They look at me and they ask me, from people, in which century are you living? I don't know. I thought at least, you know, you believe, you know, for at least 6,000 years, the Torah is going to be irrelevant. Maybe I don't know what you believe after that. When we tell children that the world out there has nothing to do with Torah, they pick up that Torah has nothing to do with the world. When we tell children, Ein Chochma Bagoyim, they end up looking for Torah Bagoyim. They end up looking for Torah Bagoyim. We have to teach them, Yesh Chochma Bagoyim. Torah, go from our perspective. Bring the two together, and you can do something with it. Children, I could go for a long, but you know, our children don't learn history. Even though the Berhetiv writes that one should learn historical books because books of history will train you to Yirat Shamayim. The Chazon Ish writes that knowledge of history and world events, to a great extent, train the wise man in his progress. It is on the happenings of the past that he will establish the pillars of his wisdom. I remember when I was a young man, I was a boy, I was 16, 17, I grew up in Montreal, and it was a Chol HaMoed Pesach. I remember that I decided to read a Jewish history book.
yeshiva bacher. I knew nothing about Jewish history, and I picked up Max DeMont's History of the Jews. Pardon? Yeah, and I read that. At the same time, being in Montreal, you know, Montreal, we have two religions, whatever it is, and hockey. I went to a Stanley Cup game. I went to a game. It was around that time. And I remember sitting at the hockey game, and all the fans around me yelling and screaming, and someone with their beer, and it was. And I just then I was reading about Hellenism and also about the Roman and the Roman stadiums. And suddenly it hit me, hey, wait a minute, you know, where am I? Do I belong here? The history gave me a sensitivity of asking myself, is this where I ought to be? No, I did not leave the game. But I was conscious of where I was and who I was because of the history. And it's important. Our children don't have a consciousness. They don't understand what the world out there is. I believe it's for that reason that some of our youngsters, when they leave Torah, when they break away, don't run to the opera. They don't run to a concert. They don't even run to a Broadway play. They sink to the lowest level of society, of entertainment that's out there, because we've taught them that everything out there is shtus, everything out there is dirt. Well, but all those dirty people, they do all these wonderful things. They create all these machines and they have all this science. Well, I want to do what they do. They don't realize that there's a world out there that has culture, it has values. There are places where any self-respecting non-believer would not want to be caught dead. But our youth are caught there, because they have no sense of values. They don't have a sense of, they don't know how to be a shagetz. If you're going to be a shagetz, at least know how to, how to be, do it with class. Go see something right, do something good. Don't fall to the crassest levels of society. And I think we need an immunization system where we need to teach them properly. The Chiddush Yearim, Chassidische Rebbe, first Gerer Rebbe, is said to have remarked that the morning after Sudat HaChashverosh in Persia, somebody came to Shul and they asked him, what's news out there? Oh, you know what's new? You know what happened at the palace last night? The king had a Suda and he invited Vashti and she should come and she refused to come and she was killed. And somebody told him there, leave me alone with your irrelevances. What does that have to do with us? And the Chiddush Yearim continues, and of course it has so much to do with us. The world out there is relevant to us. We live in the world. We are part of that world. We cannot separate ourselves or our children from that world. I've been told to ask, but I'll just want to answer the Arve Nachal. Again, the Chassidish Rebbe writes that he talks about, why does it say, Moshe Rabbeinu says, he gave us the Torah to be lived. One back, please. To be lived. Another one. Bekerav Haaretz. We should live Torah Bekerav Haaretz, in the land. And he says, why? What do you mean by in the land? And he says, because there was a philosophy of asceticism. People ran into the deserts, hidden caves, and felt that the only way to gain kedusha, the only way to gain holiness, is to be an ascetic, to separate yourself from the world. And he said, when people look at a person who's an ascetic, he doesn't eat, he doesn't drink, he doesn't do, he doesn't live like, he lives in sackcloth, he sleeps on the floor, he has no normal human contact, that's a holy person. You see a normal person leading his life every day in a normal way, he's not considered holy. If we could go on. Here, Ki Choshvim, he says, why is that? Ki Choshvim Shatorah Tzivtzach Asu Shalom Liot Shote. They think the Torah wants us to be fools. Shelo Leidam Inyaneh Olam Uma, not to know anything about the world. He says, far from it. The Torah has to be kept Bekerav Haaretz, in life, in the land, in the midst of the land, in the midst of the material, in the midst of it all, to lead an ethical life. I need to end, there's more to say on this, but I'll end with I started with Rabbi Yaakov and I'll finish with Rabbi Yaakov. Friends of mine, a
actually a Rebbe of mine, Reb David Kalman Drebenzatzal, and his Rebbetzin, on one of Reb Yaakov's trips here to Toronto, they came to ask him about various some questions. Rebbetzin Dreben was at that time principal of the Beis Yaakov Elementary, and there were many, many strictures being ordered upon her from various areas, and she wanted to know whether these are real or not. Does she have to follow them or not? And they went to ask Reb Yaakov. They placed all the questions in front of Reb Yaakov. Reb Yaakov asked them, are you asking for the klal or for the prat, for yourselves? And she said, of course, I'm asking for the community. I'm principal of Beis Yaakov. Reb Yaakov says, why are you asking me? Don't you know that they say I'm a shegetz? And they said, Nechas v'sholem. Finally, Reb Yaakov answered, but he gave a lengthy answer. We don't have the time to give a lengthy answer, but I'll tell you what he said in one word. He said, you too come from a frum background for many generations. You are used to a Torah and a way of Jewish life that is normal, that is balanced. I can't really help you. Normalcy is simply out of style. Our job is to raise our children to be normal. Normal means to be integrated with the world that they're in. Normal means to be aware of the world that they're in. Normal means to be aware of that world and to be able to bring it together with Torah, to integrate it and to lead ethical lives within the world. That is our responsibility. And if we do it right, we can raise children who can be both, who can be mentioned, as Dr. Tversky spoke, to create the mensch. Nase Adam, let us make a mensch. To make a mensch requires normalcy. Separating a child off, it doesn't work. The main important thing, it does not work. The walls do not work. Everything gets through. And if we don't immunize our children, we have problems and we have illnesses. If we help them to live normally, we expose them to what they need to be exposed and teach them how to help them process the information, teach them the value of knowledge, of debate, of intellectual inquiry, and teach them that, yes, this can be worked with Torah, then we will grow, have healthy children, children who we can be proud of. Thank you.